Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. Well, you know, it seems like in the last, 10 years or so, food has become a big deal. You know, food was always important. We had to eat. But suddenly, it's almost like we're becoming French. The Food Channel started it, I think, and there's, you know, all these intense, dramatic reality shows, kind of like Survivor, that pit cooks against each other on a battle to the death. And a lot of it's a little silly, but there are lots of great shows that kind of broaden our horizons as far as cuisine. You know, it used to be that a guy who cooked in a small restaurant was a cook, and now he's a chef, you know. But so I think our whole perception of food has been elevated in the last 10 years. There's new cable channels coming out, spinning off of the Food Channel, and we watch Paula Deen and Tyler Florence and people like that in shows devoted to Southern cooking in particular. And that, as you may have ascertained, is the topic of our show today. I have one guest with me in the studio today. His name is Mike Riley. He goes by Rathead, and apparently that's about all he goes by nowadays. So Rathead Riley, he's a Prudential insurance agent up in Bristol, Tennessee, and Bristol, Virginia area. And he's on the board of something called the Southern Foodways Alliance. We also have on the phone with us from Mississippi, John T. Edge. He's the director of the Southern Foodways Alliance, or SFA, and he does go by John T. I'm Court Lewis. I go by Court. Welcome, guys.
Thank you, Court.
Thanks, sir.
Nice to have you both here. So we're going to be talking about Southern food and all of its ramifications. I guess, John T., just start off by telling us Southern Foodways. It's not a chain of grocery stores. What is the SFA? It's not the FFA either. Tell us what it is.
The Southern Foodways Alliance is a 13-year-old based at the University of Mississippi, where I work. It's part of something called the Center for the Study of Southern Culture. And the center was the first academic program to focus on a particular region of the country and say, let's make sense of this place. Let's make sense of the American South. And let's do it by studying music, by studying literature, by studying art, by studying religion, by studying all those cultural products of a place. Let's make sense of our region by looking at those cultural products. And the center's been doing that for 35 years. The Southern Foodways Alliance came along about 13 years ago with that same idea, but that we could use food to understand who we are. So your reference to the TV shows and the like that are popular now, they're almost like the gateway drug to the real thing. Mm. Those shows make the American public aware of the food and its import. But I think what we do is kind of drill down into telling honest stories about working-class cooks, like barbecue pitmasters and fried chicken cooks, ham curers, those sorts of folks. That's what we do, is tell those stories as a way of exploring the South and helping people understand this unique place.
Well, that's really cool. So you're based at a university in the Deep South, and basically your mission is to kind of capture and elaborate on the culture of an area through different perspectives, and yours is through food, which is certainly an important part of every region's culture, right? So what kinds of events and things do you put on? What goes on with the SFA? What do you do in kind of a little more detail?
We do three things. We document, and you mentioned that earlier. We do oral history work. So we interview, we've done 600-odd oral histories, all of which are available streamed free via an iPhone app. We also make films. We've made 35-odd films that are available at southernfoodways.org. And we stage events. Rathead and I got to know one another by way of our annual event, which is the Southern Foodways Symposium. It's kind of if you think of like a tent revival meeting, but if the focus, instead of being religion, was food, then that's what that event is like, a kind of a revival for true believers in Southern food who gather each year in Oxford, Mississippi. It's an abnormal and grand way to think about the region.
That sounds like a highly enjoyable event. So what time of year does that happen down there at Oxford, Mississippi?
It's each fall. So we're right at the end of each year when about 350 people come to Oxford. There are other events that take place across the region and beyond the region in New York, San Francisco, and the like. But the primary event is each fall in Oxford, late October.
Well, and I'd add to what John T. was saying, Court, those other events John T. is referring to, One is an annual field trip to a particular region, usually in the South, to focus on that region or a product or a particular activity that's known in that area. And they are very well attended, not as big as the symposium, but often tied to the theme of the symposium that year. And actually, John T. and the staff in Oxford with the SFA came up with an exciting new approach. They are called Potlicker Film Festivals. They're staged around the South primarily, although we've now ventured into other parts of the country. And they feature those films John T. was talking about. So they are almost kind of, you know, Tupperware parties to get local people to come in and learn more about the SFA, to showcase the films. They've been hugely successful, Court, and they've helped drive up the membership and the interest in the SFA along the way.
Oh, Rathead, I mentioned that you're on the board of directors of, I guess, the East Tennessee region. I mean, how does that, does the SFA have regional organizations is what I'm getting
not
at?
Not really. We have regional representation. I think John T. does a great job in trying to work with the nominating committee and to involve members on the board from all over the country. We have board members in California, the Midwest, throughout the South, New York. So it's not regional in that respect, Court. It's really just an involvement in the organization, kind of raising your hand, volunteering to help out. And if you do so, believe me, John T. will put you to work.
They've got a very colorful and interesting website, www.southernfoodways.org, spelled like it sounds. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're here talking with John T. Edge, who's the director of the Southern Foodways Alliance, and Rathead Riley, who is a very active long-term member and board member of the Southern Foodways Alliance, about their organization and about Southern cooking. So, John T., I'll direct this question at you since you're more on the academic side there at the university. I'm not that clear on what the slow food movement is, except that I think it's the antithesis of fast food, but that's maybe a simplistic take on it. Is this related to the slow food movement in any way?
I think the Southern Foodways Alliance and the work we do in the kind of growing foodways movement, because there are other organizations like ours that are blossoming around the country, that movement wherein we focus on food as a cultural product is complementary to slow food. If you think about slow food, of which I'm a member and an admirer, slow food focuses on natural resources and says these crops, these particular varieties of cow or pig or whatever the natural resources are that we require to feed ourselves. Mm. Slow food focuses on the retention of those natural resources. The Southern Foodways Alliance, on the other hand, focuses on human resources. This idea we talked earlier about, you know, the old guard fried chicken cooks or the barbecue pit masters. What are their stories? What about their lives can tell us a grander story about the South? In exploring those people's work, how do we come to understand the South better? So the compliment there is, though this is, you know, kind of a gross point to put on something very fine, but, you know, if slow food focuses on natural resources, the Southern Foodways Alliance focuses on human resources. Make sense?
Yeah, it does. That's a good answer. Really, really interesting what you guys are doing. Let me ask maybe either or both of you. You know, you think of classic Southern food as, you know, fried chicken and fried green tomatoes, I guess, and chicken and dumplings and okra and a few things. But what are some other examples of classic Southern food, just to kind of go down the list a little bit?
Well, I'll throw corn in, first of all, as a grain, and then using corn as the grain itself, Court, you've got one of our all-time favorite dishes. That would be grits. And,
oh, yeah.
And there's some phenomenal growth in that area, but not in terms of large production, but just the opposite, small-scale production. And there's some great names of producers now milling grits and cornmeal, obviously for something that we would recognize as a great dish. And John T. can tell us a lot more, but pork is probably identified as one of the great Southern products in its best form, as far as I'm concerned. Pork barbecue is on the top of my list.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you got cornbread for sure.
Excuse me, yes, sir.
And then the old word, I guess,
maybe
is
corn alcohol. Grain alcohol, of course. And there's a whole story to be told about that, obviously.
Yeah. So pork and then chicken, I guess, is big,
yes, sir,
too, right? Well, what are the origins of Southern food? I mean, I guess there are different categories of it, right? So kind of break some of those down and talk about where Southern food comes from culturally and historically.
Well, I think, you know, to Radhead's point, pork and corn are kind of the base ingredients of Southern food. Both are raised in very frugal fashion. You know, a pig puts on weight quickly compared to a cow. And corn grows easily and is a native crop of the Americas. So both of those really are the base. But to your second point, as you travel the South, Southern food varies. If you think about the size and geography of the American South, you know, the South is comparable in size to Western Europe. So, you know, when we talk about food, we don't often talk about European food. We talk about Italian food. We talk about French food. We talk about German food. And I think the same applies to the South. We're not really, if we're doing our job right, we're helping people understand the intricacies of the region by way of exploring the foods of the Appalachian South versus the foods of the Deep South versus the foods of the Gulf South and the Tidewater. There are all these different regions with signature foods, so that if you're in your own backyard, if you're up in northeastern Tennessee, you're eating ham, and you're hopefully eating ham cured by a gentleman like Alan Benton in Madisonville, Tennessee. Alan, who's become one of the most revered artisans in America, is curing hams by the side of the road in Madisonville and has been doing it for a generation. And that food is tied so much to that place that when we think about, you know, what food comes from what place, how do we define the foods of the South, I would say that Alan's food represents Appalachian South. It also represents very specifically that area of Tennessee where he cures it, whether it's the ambient effects of temperature fluctuation in that area, whether it is the skill that he has acquired over generations, whether it's the pork and which farmer he buys those pigs from, and the wood that he uses to give a smoke to some of that. All those are very local products and create this kind of ecosystem of food that is existent only in that place. So I think when we talk about Southern food, we talk about the larger sweep, it's a huge region, but then we talk about really specific places and about the honor of the work of a person like Alan Benton making some of the best ham and bacon in America and making it, you know, right there in Madisonville, Tennessee.
Alan, I hope you're listening. You just got the best promo you'll ever get. So another classic Southern food is fried catfish. Is that throughout the South?
Radhead, where have you seen, you know, have you seen catfish throughout the region?
John T., not so much. Obviously, we're tied to Mississippi through the SFA, and we actually know a number of the producers of catfish down there. It's not farm-raised in other parts of the South, I think, as much as it is in Mississippi. We see catfish more as a fish that someone will go out and actually cast a line to bring in. So I would think that the production probably does hinge in your backyard down below you. Below Oxford.
It is, and Radhead's point is a great one. You know, catfish was once something that you caught with a pole, and at that point, you know, catfish houses, you could find them across the South, and they were usually in close proximity to a river where people caught fish. You know, the White River in Arkansas, or, you know, the Tennessee River, you see groupings of old catfish houses that way. Now, since the catfish industry has come to the fore, and you have pond-raised catfish, which feeds on grain pellets, which are distributed over the water, you see a real concentration of catfish houses in the Deep South, especially in Mississippi and western Alabama, are the two highest concentrations. That dish has become synonymous with the South, and rightly so, but that dish, like much of Southern food, has changed recently. It hasn't changed for the worse. It hasn't changed for the better. It's just changed. And the change has been pond-raised catfish is the norm now.
And the same goes for a lot of products that are now distributed nationwide that used to be just local produce. But, you know, another thing that occurs to me is barbecue, which has so many different styles, right? There's Memphis barbecue. There's a mustard-based barbecue that I guess is prevalent down in the South Carolina and around that area. And then there's, you know, there's just different kinds of sauces. So that's something that distinguishes the same kind of food, pulled pork, basically, regionally,
right.
or brisket, I guess, too. But it's done different from one region to another, and that's a cultural thing, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you could map the South by barbecue sauce, and, you know, you could go county by county and look at variations. I'm going to reveal myself to be the full barbecue food geek that I am, but you can go from east to west in the South, and you can map barbecue from on the eastern plains of North Carolina, at places like the Skylight Inn and Aden, North Carolina, at places in the South Carolina plain like Scott's Barbecue and Variety Store in Hemingway, South Carolina, where a sauce is mostly vinegar and red pepper and not much else.
Mm.
And then as you go west, you begin to pick up some sweetness, some sugar, some ketchup, some molasses. As you move from east to west, the barbecue changes. And to your point, there are pockets where mustard is predominant. And it's not just in South Carolina. There are pockets of Georgia where you'll see the same. I was just up in northern Alabama, right around Florence, this past week, and there was a place called Bunyan's Barbecue there, and their slaw is like a mustard-based slaw that's actually the sauce for the barbecue. And, you know, it's all about the mustard. So those variants are really tightly defined, and, you know, if you grew up on one barbecue and somebody introduces you to another, that's pestilence. It's not pleasure. You say, this isn't what I grew up on. And that's the great thing about it. It varies county to county in the South. And those traditions are held dear by people who recognize this is the barbecue of my youth. And that barbecue of your youth is the best thing you can possibly taste.
Yep.
It still is for me.
That's true. Well, you know, there are other major subdivisions that I can think of within Southern food. I mean, when you think of it, Cajun food, although its origins are, I guess, French Canada, Quebec, but it's really become Southern food, but it's very distinct, right? And Creole is next door to it, kind of blended in with it, and that's Southern food. There's soul food, so, you know, what about some of those major subdivisions?
Well, you know, soul food is the urbanized food of black expatriates, in essence. When African Americans left farms in the Deep South and moved either to cities in the Deep South or more likely and more often move to cities in the urban north looking for jobs, that food of the farm was transformed to an urban food. And as the Black Power movement gained strength in the late 1960s and soul music came to the fore and soul power, as a mantra chanted by African Americans came to the fore, so did soul food. So it's, you know, it's a late 1960s, early 1970s construct.
Hmm.
It refers to food that moves from the farm to an urban area and from the South to the North. And it has a bunch of other definitions, too. But that's a black, to my mind and to my definition, a black food, an African-American food. You know, Cajun and Creole are different sorts of definitions to sort out that are based really not upon race but upon place.
Hmm. That's right, yeah. So I guess Cajun and Creole would be much more localized, whereas soul food is spread around quite a bit. That's interesting. I didn't realize that it was an urban transmigration of Southern food, because I think of it really as largely Southern food, fried chicken and collard greens and so on. I grew up eating those things, and even in
right.
Miami, which is not exactly, it's sort of like South New Jersey, I guess, but it's still, when I was a kid, it was still a small town in the South, really.
Well, you know, I spent time in Miami recently and spent a lot of time driving. I can't remember the street, but there were people on the side of the road selling sugar cane that they brought down from Georgia. There were people selling what they call Georgia bullets, which are muscadine grapes. And there were fried chicken joints up and down the street, but they sold fried chicken as well as curried conch. And those were soul food joints, soul food restaurants. But they were kind of this creolized, in a lower sea creolized. They reflected the Caribbean and they reflected the American South, but were no less Southern to me for that.
So I think of Southern cooking in a way, I hate to say it, but a lot of it seems unhealthy by our standards today. It's a lot of fried food, a lot of very sweet food, a lot of food with creamy sauces and so on. Is that style of cooking dying out? And if so, why? And, you know, maybe that kind of stuff is just losing popularity. What do you think?
You want to make me grumpy?
I could ask Rathead to answer.
Rathead, you better take that one, because I'm going to offer a grumpy answer.
Well, I'm glad you're on the phone and a long way away. Nay, don't get me wrong. I love that food. but it's not necessarily good for your arteries, right? So what is, I mean, another positive way to ask the question is, what are Southern chefs doing about that aspect of the cuisine? Anything?
Go ahead, John T.
All right. So if you're going to toss it back to me, I mean, there are two things, I think. One, I think what you're responding to is the Paula Deen idea of Southern food. Mm. And I don't think that's representative of Southern food. I think that's television food, which says, throw another stick of butter on it and draw a little deeper and call it Southern. Mm. I don't think that's, you know, here we're in a region that has traditionally had the longest growing season of any region of the country. We have a vegetable-focused cuisine, and for the longest time, meat was what flavored the vegetables. Meat was not front and center. Mm. I think many of the ways we've come to think about the South as a place where everything's deep fried, where everything's sobbed in bacon grease, are kind of bastardized Southern food, not honest Southern food. And I think what's happened really recently, though, is television. There have been many good effects of Food Network. It's made people aware of regional differences in food, but I think it's also brought out this kind of instinct towards stunt food, which says, you know, cover it up with cheddar cheese, add another stick of butter, and call it Southern. And I don't think that's representative of the diversity of Southern foods I see out there. The second point I'll make, I promise I won't go off on a long rant, is that, you know, foods like fried chicken and barbecue, for me and for most of the people I know, are ceremonial foods. It's not something I eat every day. I would say I eat fried chicken, you know, at the most every couple weeks, and probably about the same with barbecue. But I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater or the collard greens out with the pot liquor. You know, I think those foods eaten occasionally, while we don't need them kind of to plow the back 40 anymore, we don't need the calorie load, those foods matter as like a sacrament for Southerners too. So my two answers are, one, I don't think that kind of high-fat, high-butter, high-cheese cooking is really representative of the South. And then the things that are representative of the South, like fried chicken and barbecue, I think eaten judiciously and eaten once in a while are important ceremonial foods.
Well, the other thing is there are a lot of Southern classic Southern foods that are healthy. I mean, you mentioned collard greens. I would call that a healthy food. And okra, now you can have it fried, which is possibly comes along with a big dollop of grease, but you can also have it cooked with, sautéed with tomatoes and onions, right. And it's delicious and quite healthy for you, I would say. That kind of thing. And then, you know, the beans that are common in Southern foods are, you know, a staple of human diet going back to, you know, the beginning of humanity, of human history, right? So those are healthy things. But you mentioned a few people earlier, John T., who are kind of classic Southern chefs who are well-known and expert at what they do, where they do it. And question to both of you, really, but who are some other chefs who are bringing Southern food and Southern cooking back in a big way as a specialized cuisine that's done very, very well?
I can't imagine a better person to answer that than Rathead, who
well, I,
the thank most you. Well-traveled.
He's going to begin with his wife, I'm sure, but
no,
get past that.
I'll point to one individual who has probably done more recently to focus on Southern food, and that would be Sean Brock. First, the chef at McCrady's, but he's just opened a restaurant last year called Husk, which was dubbed the best new restaurant in America by Food and Wine or Bon Appetit, one of the magazines. And
where is that?
It's in Charleston, sorry. It's in Charleston, South Carolina.
Okay.
And Sean's entire focus is to make sure that all of the ingredients that he can put on your plate are coming from the South. Mm. And to John T's point about our growing season in the South and our vegetable-based focus, Sean has become not only a great chef but also a farmer. He is focusing on place so that he not only knows where his food is coming from, but he also celebrates that for the diner by putting a list of all of the items he's using and all of the farmers and growers and fishermen and clammers and so forth who are providing those products for Sean and his great staff of chefs to work with. So he may be one of the leaders in that area. Another one comes to mind, John T., would be Ashley Christensen of Poole's Diner in Raleigh, North Carolina. Converted an old diner court and made it into one of the hottest restaurants in the South. Quick comment, I think John T.'s right that it's, I mean, you know, Court, there's a farm-to-table movement, and what better place than in the South, where we have a long growing season, we have great farms, not big ones, but small ones, with folks who are dedicated to producing organically grown, sustainably grown produce, and working carefully with them to make sure that gets from the farm into the hands of the right chefs and then onto the plates of the diners. The list is long. Stephen Satterfield in Atlanta, Linton Hopkins in Atlanta. John T., help me out.
I mean, I think you're right, Redhead. The list of people doing this is long, and what's happening is this idea, this farm-to-table idea, which is kind of part of the national dialogue, you know, whether it's radio, television, magazines, everybody's talking about farm-to-table connections. And that sounds like something new, as if it's been something that people have figured out in the last generation. Mm. But the reality is, you know, this is the way our grandparents ate. This is the way, if you grew up in the South, when you're of my age, I'm in my 40s, you know, my grandparents ate this way. As a consumer, I'm rediscovering that, but I'm not inventing anything new, and neither are these chefs. They're just reattaching the tethers between their table and the farm. And that's the difference with the South. In a lot of regions that didn't have as strong and as long an agricultural history as we did, they are reinventing something. California cuisine in the 1970s was something new. What we're seeing now is kind of a lavishing of attention on something old and a revivification of it, but not a creation of something new. Just a deep and profound commitment to something old and framing it in a new way.
That all sounds true, and that all sounds good, and you're making me hungry. We just have less than a minute left, guys. I'm going to ask you both to answer quickly. What's your favorite Southern food? Just give me one thing, if you can pick one out of the pile.
Pimento cheese.
Oh, is that right? That wouldn't have been one I would have thought. Okay. John T.?
Mustard greens with flat-top hoe cakes.
Oh, sounds good. Southern Foodways Alliance. The website, again, is www.southernfoodways.org. They're also on Facebook. You can look them up under Southern Foodways. Do you have a book for sale that you'd like to tell folks about from Southern Foodways?
We do. We recently published a book called The Southern Foodways Alliance Community Cookbook, which is kind of a reinvigoration of the community cookbook form that uses that kind of, we got 12 people who collected recipes from across the South. Here they are representing the modern South, the South of the moment. It's a good thing.
John T. Edge and Rathead Riley of the Southern Foodways Alliance, I sure appreciate you both being on with us on American Variety.
Well, thank you, Court.
And thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.